You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 187. I am your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and tonight we go in search of... Well, hey y'all, welcome back to another fun-filled and exciting episode of the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast. And you know what? I realize through all of these episodes, and you guys, I'm coming up towards, I think, 100 episodes that I've recorded. It's so crazy that I never did one on the TV show In Search Of. And dude, I loved the TV show In Search Of. And I think longtime listeners, even not that long time listeners, have heard me use In Search Of as an example all the time. I always use the TV show In Search Of as an example of what I was excited to watch when I was a kid, right? And for those of us who don't know, In Search Of was sort of a mystery pseudo-science, pseudo-archaeology show that ran, I believe, from 1976 to 1982. That was when it was originally put out. I think they had six seasons, something like that, and hosted by Leonard Nimoy, right? Mr. Spock. Now, even though the show was originally recorded in the late 70s and early 80s, it was on reruns, you guys, all the time. So my memories of this show aren't from watching it live in like 1978 or something. At that point, I was only like 6 years old. My memories of it are watching reruns, trying to catch as many reruns as I could in, like, you know, 1984, 85, 86, when I'm like a young teenager and when I'm home alone. There's a whole setup to this. And it's funny, as I explored In Search Of a little bit more, all these memories came kind of flooding back in terms of, you know, my whole ritual in terms of watching this show, trying to find when this show was on, because it was always, In Search Of has always been like a B-team show. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. It's not, this is not one that was like the hugest ratings, ABC number one. It was always like the second stringer. I think it did pretty well, but it was always kind of a second stringer show. And since this is a time way before the internet and searchable Google anythings, it could be difficult to figure out what channel it was on and when it was actually on. It seemed to me like it would get syndicated on one channel for a little while, then it kind of fade away, and then it'd be somewhere else. But I was always into looking for this. And a lot of times it would be on kind of midday. So a cliche memory for me of this is how this would go down. It's like 1984 and I'm like 12 years old. And one of two things has happened. Either I'm sick for the day, so I'm going to be home alone all day, or I'm just coming home from school, like right after school. Maybe I don't have any sports to do or anything. And I just come straight home from school and I have a key. I'm a cliche Gen X latchkey kid. And I would just come home and I realize I have like 2 hours or whatever alone. I had a younger brother, but maybe he's being babysat or something. And you might think that sounds sad, or being home alone all day while sick. You guys, I loved it. I loved being able to like just be home alone. And I loved the agency of having my own key to like my own house. You know, I just dug it. And so what I would do, I'd turn on the TV. I'd get ready for my In Search Of. And by doing this, I would, then we had this little TV tray. I don't see these that much anymore, but a little TV tray is like these little simple little like table, a little mini table, a little fold out, really cheap. They're like an aluminum table practically. And they're only like maybe a foot and a half wide, or you just flip it out. It's very simple. It's almost like an end table, right? It's so tiny, but you'd flip it out. And the idea would be, of course, you know, this stuff, it's a very 1950s idea, as you would eat your microwave, you know, dinner on your TV tray while watching TV. So I'd flip out my TV tray and I'd go to the refrigerator and I'd find some leftovers. And specifically, I can see in my mind finding some like chicken legs left over from like a chicken my mom had made, like, you know, the night before or two nights before or whatever. And I would get that stuff together and I'd like microwave it and I'd bring it out on my TV tray and I would sit there. And like, when I think of this, I still smell the chicken. Like I still smell my finger smelling like chicken, if that makes sense. Like that's the sensory memory for me, is the smell of like microwaved, you know, baked chicken from the night before. So I sit down and then I just watch In Search Of, and I just like watch that sucker. I loved it, yo. And that's my deal as a 12-year-old in 1984. You know, I loved watching any kind of true crime shows that were on, any of that stuff, right? I spooked myself once or twice because I was home alone, and I still remember this, you guys, and I think many of you do, especially those who live in California. Remember when The Night Stalker was out? And so The Night Stalker is a famous serial killer, right? I was doing my thing with my TV tray, watching my In Search Of's or whatever, and I was flipping the channels. And then they had a report, it was on the news, on The Night Stalker. I'm home alone. It's like 3:45 in the afternoon. And it was the very first time they ever showed the sketch of The Night Stalker, right? He hadn't been caught yet. But that sketch, if any of you guys remember the sketch of The Night Stalker with like the bulgy eyes, it was so scary. I'm getting goosebumps right now talking about it. It was so scary that as a 12-year-old kid, I've never done this before or since. Obviously, as a 12-year-old, you like to watch edgy stuff. You know, you want to like get into all this true crime. It was so scary that I just put down my chicken leg, pushed my TV tray to the side, walked up to the TV and turned it off, and then like sat back down. Like my child brain was like, you don't need to watch this, right? That was the only time, I think, before or since that I've ever done that. So that's that world. I never turned off In Search Of. So what's the deal with In Search Of, right? What's the background? Then we'll get into kind of specific episodes and themes and stuff. So this part I didn't know until looking through this. In Search Of was the baby of a guy named Alan Landsberg. And he was a producer. He ran, you guessed it, Alan Landsberg Productions. And looking into the types of things he produced, it was fascinating, you guys, because Alan Landsberg basically made huge portions of the 1980s television possible. So some of the other shows he did, now In Search Of is just one of many, he tended to angle towards like the world of the documentary, right? Or like what today we'd call, you know, what is that? Almost what would become unscripted media, or, you know, biographies, or almost, I think he did one or two National Geographic things. So he's in that world of stuff. And he produced, while In Search Of was in its final days, he actually started and produced That's Incredible. Dude, children of the 80s, you remember That's Incredible. That's Incredible was a huge show. It's sort of like a variety show where people would do stunts and stuff. And you guys remember like John Davidson and Kathy Lee Crosby. I think it's Fran Tarkenton. You know, these three, it's like three B movie has-been actors. It's every time I see a cut from That's Incredible and I see those hosts, I think of The Simpsons' Troy McClure, you know. Hi, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such hits as That's Incredible, In Search Of, and Honey, I Shrunk the Car. You know, it, those guys, it's like a walk and talk and cliche in the best sense. You guys, cliche or not, I watched 1,000 episodes of That's Incredible. You know, and this is from this guy. So he did That's Incredible. Dude, he did the like TV movie Adam. in the early 80s. Remember Adam Walsh, who started the whole America's Most Wanted, the dad, you know, because Adam Walsh was kidnapped and murdered. Oh my God. He did the Ryan White story. Damn, dude. These are like touchstones of my Gen X childhood. Thank you, Alan Lansberg. It's wild. But before he was doing all that, and again, you know, a world of movies of the week, TV documentaries, this kind of stuff. I'm sure the guy did really well for himself. In Search of doesn't just spring to life, you know, in 1976, right, with Leonard Nimoy. It's built upon from several specials, I believe, that Alan Lansberg originally did. And these specials, they were one-offs that I think he did basically once a year. He did one in 1973, one in 1974, and one in 1975, I think. But these specials were like, the very first one was called In Search of Ancient Astronauts, right? Comes out in 1973. And as you guys know, based on Eric von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods, which would have come out in 1968, right? So this is where you see, I think, Eric von Däniken and Chariots of the Gods breaking into the TV world. So I can't help myself. I love Alan Lansberg's stuff, but at the same time, he has caused me great pain, you know, in terms of translating what was largely a book pseudo-archaeology thing into a television pseudo-archaeology thing, right? And that's what Alan Lansberg's productions is doing. I can't fault them because they're just trying to sell stuff on TV. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it has caused me pain, Alan Lansberg. You have hurt me. But I do love you for In Search Of. These first couple specials, though, were hosted by Rod Serling, Mr. Rod Serling from Twilight Show. Right? It all makes sense, right? So Rod Serling did the fantastic Twilight Show in that, was that late 50s, kind of early 60s, into the mid 60s, I think, all in black and white. If you haven't watched the Twilight Show, dude, you need to get on that. My daughter and I watched it several episodes at one point. We were really getting into Twilight Show. I think it was kind of over COVID and stuff, but that was great. Twilight Show translates, you guys. It's really impressive at how, even though the show is, you know, 60 years old, it's still a great show. It really delivers. Anyway, I think that Alan Lansberg was positioning Rod Serling to be the host of In Search Of, right? It's like, okay, these three specials that were done, you know, one a year, we're all successful. Let's turn this into a series. And we're going to call it In Search Of, and each episode's going to have a different theme. Rod Serling dies in 1975. So after, you know, after the third one, he has a heart attack at age 50. You guys, I can't believe this. I'm older than Rod Serling. Good God. Right. So dies at age 50. And he had a heart attack, but he had smoked. Rod Serling, a famous multi-pack per day smoker. So, you know, hey, kids, don't smoke. So unfortunately, Rod Serling has died. But luckily for us, another actor who's just come off a very famous science fiction TV series and doesn't have too much to do comes onto the horizon, and we start off with Leonard Nimoy when we return. Well, hello and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 187, with your intrepid host, Dr. I mean, is he really? Andrew Kinkella. And we are talking about In Search Of, man. And we were just talking about the setup, you know, of how this show kind of came to be. And it's basically this combination of factors where you have Alan Lansberg, who's making these kind of productions. Then you have, he does a couple specials. It is influenced by Chariots of the Gods, Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods. And he's going to have Rod Serling host, but Rod Serling dies, so he gets Leonard Nimoy. And now he's gonna make the show, right? And they start turning him out, and they start hitting. You guys, as I looked through this, I never knew how many episodes of In Search Of there actually were. They did 24 episode seasons, and they did 6 seasons. So plus a couple, you know, no, that looks like pretty much. So we are looking at almost 150 episodes of In Search Of. I swear, if you just nailed me to the wall about it before I kind of researched this and asked me, hey, how many total episodes of In Search Of do you think were filmed? I would have said maybe like 30. You know, because it in my mind, I feel like I've seen this really the same 7 or 10, like 20 times. You know, it's funny though to look through. So they were really cranking these out, and these are ultimately sold to NBC. So NBC is the network who is showing this, and you know, as we go through the themes of what they talked about, I think in many ways, In Search Of sets the template for what everyone does today, meaning what every production company does today, whether it's A&E, whether it's the History Channel, whether it's even like National Geographic or Onward and so on, right? Or at least what production companies do. It reminds me so much of my stint on the TMZ show, Strange and Suspicious, right? The themes are just the same. It's this idea of talking about the unexplained mystery stuff, right? And putting kind of a fun spin on it. Now, when we were doing Strange and Suspicious, there was always a bit of a lightheartedness to it. In Search Of is going to take those same things, but they're more serious and more dark, right? Which I just ate up, you guys, as a kid. So if we look at these themes, I mean, the very first show they ever did was called Other Voices. And it was looking at experiments that show that the possibility that plants respond to people's thoughts. and some of these others, though, as we go, they hit all the highs. The Bermuda Triangle is their fourth episode, right? Dude, Bigfoot. I mean, watch me here. Watch. I'll read some of them really fast. The Mummy's Curse, Martians, Atlantis, Psychic Detectives, Nazi Plunder, Amelia Earhart, The Easter Island Massacre, Life After Death, The Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, Inca Treasure, The Magic of Stonehenge. I mean, look at that. It is a cliche of cliches list, as always, in the best possible sense. I mean, these are great. And I have to say, you guys, as I look through this list, I don't think I've ever found more of a treasure trove of possibilities for myself, right? What I just told you, that was just a smattering of the episodes from season one. Remember, there's 6 seasons of this. You know, as I look through this, obviously stuff we've done, I've talked about, geez, have I talked about Amelia Earhart? Yes, I think I did Amelia Earhart on this, but I've done, you know, stuff like Atlantis, Stonehenge, right? These are old school classics. As we look further, they do like Shroud of Turin, Secrets of the Pyramids, Dead Sea Scrolls, right? I've done a lot of these, but there are many, you guys, that I have not done. And I'm like, oh my God, I haven't done that one. I don't think I've truly done a focused one on Bermuda Triangle. How dare I? You know, sometimes because we're pseudo-archaeology podcasts, I like to make it specific. I'd like to try and be as specific in archaeology as possible, right? And I don't want to just be sort of pseudoscience, but I can cheat on Bermuda Triangle because I do know some of the stuff, like, you know, the actual ships and planes that were lost. Those would be archaeological sites. So, dude, Bermuda Triangle counts. I didn't even think of that. Oh, Martians. They did one on Martians. I've already done. Damn. I've already done the Ice of Mars. Yeah. Damn. Nazi Plunder. You know, the whole like Nazi gold thing, it just brings me down. So I have standards, you know. I don't know if I would I don't know if I would do that one. Same with, I can't remember if I've done a deep dive onto like Loch Ness Monster specifically, because Loch Ness Monster is not very pseudo archaeology. You know what I mean? But sometimes I would bend the rules one more time for some of these most famous ones. You know, we're talking Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot. I did do something on cryptids in general, which Bigfoot would be one, but Bigfoot might be worth like a whole show, you know, because it's good background knowledge, because so many pseudo archaeology stories, they rip off these more famous ones, you know, be it Bigfoot, be it Loch Ness Monster. I do remember this about the In Search of show. So it started with like, you know, a bunch of images of mysteries and places and stuff. And then it had this line where it says, "This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine." Right? Keeping it open. That's just great. Another thing I remember of this is that there were like these categories of like what we're going to look at tonight, you know, and the show would do vignettes as you know, but focus on one big thing. And they had these themes, and I think that they would give it at the beginning, right? That their themes were extraterrestrials, magic and witchcraft, missing persons, myths and monsters, lost civilizations, and special phenomena that they also called strange phenomena. There you go, right? Those are the themes that are used till today. Again, when we were doing the show Strange and Suspicious, it was exactly this. You know, these are ones. So me as a pseudo-archaeologist, as a purveyor of pseudo-archaeological themes, I can't really do like missing persons unless it angles specifically kind of towards, you know, the find or something like that. I could in some ways, but you get my meaning here. Actually, when we were doing the show Strange and Suspicious, there were two people who worked specifically in the law enforcement world, right? They had so much knowledge about that world. So really, when you look at these themes, in my example of Strange and Suspicious, we had people who covered, you know, like basically all of these themes in different ways. So I think as we look deeper at these shows, you know, again, watch shows on the History Channel, on the Sci-Fi Channel, on, you know, produced by like A&E or Discovery, or you get my meaning, you know, they all use this setup with these themes that has been really, I think, solidified as a successful, like a successful sort of flowchart or way of doing things, solidified by In Search of, you know. And if you guys remember, a typical show would sort of set up what they were going to talk about that day, you know, let's, you know, today, the mystery of the Bermuda Triangle. And then you'd have Leonard Nimoy there, and Leonard Nimoy would kind of like set up the scene. He'd do a little paragraph or two, you know, where he'd talk for a minute or two. And it was fun because it was like Leonard Nimoy with a mustache. You're like, Mr. Spock got a mustache now, you know, and he'd be dressed in his like late 70s regalia. You know, he got his like bell bottoms going on and his sweet like jacket that with the big lapels looking awesome. I love that part of it, right? Even in 1984 or in the 80s when I'm watching this, that it was already old. You know, it already looked old. I'm telling you, even by like 84 or so, even as a child, I knew that the 70s were lame, right? I knew that like big lapels looked like lame, right? Later, I would be pegging my pants like any cool kid. But it's funny how quickly that fashion just like hit a wall. So anyway, like Leonard Nimoy would set it up, and then they'd go to sort of like some stock footage of the actual location, and or they'd have like reenactments, you know, they would have actors and stuff there and do these reenactments, and they'd have some creepy music in the background. And even though, of course, 3/4 of the time, this stuff is total fake pseudo archaeology nonsense, Oh, what a great ride, you guys. You know, and I think that's one of the parts is we as real archaeologists, we have to want to take the audience on a ride like that. It's like, do you want to watch a serious mustachioed late 70s Mr. Spock tell you a creepy story? Hell yeah, I want to hear that. You know, when we return, my final thoughts, which are always awesome, on In Search Of. Well, hello one last time, and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 187. I'm your host, Andrew Kinkella, and we have been discussing one of my old school classic favorites, the TV show In Search Of, with Leonard Nimoy. Six seasons of fun, my friends. So, you know, at the break right then, which is basically where I turn off the recording and I like reset my notes and I kind of take a sip of water and then I start again. I realized I forgot to say one thing about Alan Landsberg. Alan Landsberg, so he's born in like, I think he's born in 1933. But what that means, why that matters is he was in the Korean War, right? So he gets drafted into the army and he's in the Korean War. And in the army, though, he works for like the radio network. He's like writing scripts and stuff. And I just think that's hilarious because he's basically Good Morning Vietnam, except he's in Korea, you know, and he's sort of the script writing side of that. So that's where he learns to tell a story, to write a story. And he parlays that after the war, right, into television, into movies of the week and this kind of thing. Makes total sense. So now, you know, as we go through and sort of have our final discussion on In Search Of, I do have to say, back to that child in 1984, watching TV and eating some drumsticks off his TV tray. Oh, and I would have already eaten my Nerds candy that I bought from like the corner market from like the 7-Eleven. Although there weren't any 7-Elevens close by. They were always kind of no name, like little markets, you know, usually often owned by like a Vietnamese family, because this is the early 80s. And actually in the Bay Area, you have a lot of Vietnamese families who got here fresh from Vietnam, you know, escaping that situation. But anyway, I digress. So I've eaten my Nerds candies on the way home. I'm sure I had none left even by the time I reached my home, and now I'm eating my chicken wing, or sorry, my chicken leg. I would have eaten the wing right away. And I'm watching it In Search Of. In that child brain, when I think back, I'm telling you guys that the most famous stories that we're talking about, I learned for the first time in Search Of, right? My very first interest. Here's a couple. I wrote these to myself. Easter Island. For whatever reason, I totally remember the Easter Island show, and they would always show like sunset sort of behind the Moai statues, right? The cliche famous Easter Island statues. And it was like so creepy and cool. Like I just loved it. That sense of like deep time and mystery. Loch Ness Monster. Loch Ness Monster to me was always one of the lamer, more like pathetic, weak ones, but I was introed to it by Mr. Spock, by Leonard Nimoy himself on In Search Of. Stonehenge too. I was like, oh, that's what Stonehenge, you know. Sadly, some of these shows, you know, I think sometimes drop the ball with actually teaching the people, even as they tell their mysterious pseudo story. If I had one hit that I would do to In Search Of, and honestly, a lot of modern shows too, it's, if you're going to do crazy pseudoscience stuff, which is also fun, you could throw some reality in the beginning just to teach the audience a little bit right in the very front. Sometimes they would do this in In Search Of, but they could have done a little better. Roanoke, that's another one. I loved the lost colony of Roanoke, you guys. Just looking through these possibilities, I was like, Roanoke, that's one I gotta do. I haven't done Roanoke on the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast. See, you guys, a treasure trove of possibilities here. This has given me my next 2 years of themes. See, I knew my love for In Search Of would pay out. Another one that we've heard so much, D.B. Cooper. I mean, good God, what mystery show like this hasn't done D.B. Cooper. But look, I'm a 12-year-old. My mind is empty. This is the first time it is filled with D.B. Cooper. I'm like, I thought it was fascinating. The Mary Celeste. So the Mary Celeste is like a ghost ship, you know, kind of story. I loved the Mary Celeste story. It was so creepy. Oh, so good. I just loved sitting there in my creepitude, you know, with my chicken leg. Oh, and then, of course, Jim Jones, which was creepy. But so Jim Jones is one that's so, and this is the mass where everyone drank Kool-Aid and killed themselves, you know, in Ghana. I almost didn't like Jim Jones as much just because it was totally true, you know, and it was just sort of sad and such a bummer. So I was much more of a fan of like, give me like the Mary Celeste and Roanoke, like all day, you know. There were other ones, Lost Dutchman's Mine. Oh, jeez. Show of hands, how many of you want me to do Lost Dutchman's Mine? I kind of want to do it. They have one called Mayan Mysteries, of course. Oh. They did Michael Rockefeller. This, I ran across this, you guys, like two or three weeks ago. I did a deep dive just for myself on the story of Michael Rockefeller. So Michael Rockefeller, obviously related to the rich family of the Rockefellers, he disappeared amongst sort of a tribal society, you know, the whole mystery of Michael Rockefeller. It's kind of a good one. They have so many Dead Sea Scrolls already did. Yeah, I'm looking through some of these, the title lines to see if it knocks my memory. You know what I do notice? So I've cruised through this. We're six seasons, right? Once you get to around season 3.5 into season 4, you can tell they're starting to like bottom of the barrel it. Check this out, dude. This is what season 3, episode 16, The Money Pit Mystery. They did Oak Island, right? I think I touched on that last time when I talked about Oak Island. I'm like, I think In Search of did Oak Island. They did. Here's one I don't remember at all. Let check this out. Here, the title, Psychic Sea Hunt. Here's a synopsis. A team of psychics give scientists the exact description and location of an unknown shipwreck, and a submarine hunt proves them right. Yeah, right. That one gotta suck. See, that's by the end of season 3. Oh no. They got ones just called like brain power, the potential of the human mind. You're running out of stuff. Shrouded Turin doesn't show up until season 4. D.B. Cooper doesn't show up until season 4. Wow. San Andreas Fault. I guess when you're running out, you just run towards geology. Yeah, oh, they did the Bimini Road, although they called it the Bimini Wall. So by the end of season 4, that's it. I mean, the Bimini Road is completely stupid, but it's a reasonable episode for them to do. If you guys remember, we did Bimini Road a long time ago. That's the Stones of Atlantis, these square-shaped, again, geological formation in Bermuda. I don't remember that. Yeah, see, they start to angle, I think, a bit more into sort of ESP, mental, you know, seeing ghosts, that kind of stuff, and away from some of these really solid. You know that things are going south when you're covering the Lindbergh kidnapping. We're already into, yeah, season 5. I think they're trying different things. See if anything will stick. They're probably trying it and then looking at the ratings or something. I don't know. Great Wall of China. See, if they're doing an episode like Great Wall of China, that could actually be something where it's a little bit more, let's teach the history a little bit. Good for them. Oh, they did Holy Grail. That's one, you guys. Holy Grail is on my shortest of short lists. Next couple episodes, definitely the Holy Grail will be in there. See, Jesse James, what are you even? Yeah. Houdini, you know, like got nothing left. You know what's interesting though? I think In Search Of becomes almost a cult classic. I don't know. I hope that those of you listening to me talk about this are like, oh yeah, In Search Of, you know, especially of a certain age, you know, Gen Xers. it kind of, I think In Search of kind of like disappeared from the earth, you know, by the 90s. They tried to re-up it though, like two times. In 2002, the Sci-Fi Channel tried to re-up it for one episode. They used, instead of Leonard Nimoy, they used the actor Mitchell Pileggi. And this guy, oh, he was one of the characters in, yeah, he was in X-Files. He was on Stargate Atlantis, right? He's totally in that world. That makes sense. They're trying to go for an actor kind of like Leonard Nimoy. And they're just doing a lot of the same things. They try it one more time. The History Channel tries to revive it in 2018, this time using Zachary Quinto as the host, right? Of course, because Zachary Quinto is playing Mr. Spock on the Star Trek reboots, you know? So they throw him on there. I've never seen this. And my radar is usually pretty on. I guess they did two seasons in 2018 and 2019. Yeah, look at these. Look at season two, Loch Ness Monster, Roanoke, Secrets of the Bible, Bermuda Triangle, Nazi Secrets, UFOs, End of the World. Season one, Atlantis, Life After Death, Artificial Intelligence, Monsters of the Deep, Aliens. Yeah. So they're literally doing all the same stuff. I can't blame them. So yeah, there you have it. You know, so after the show's finished in 1982, right? So In Search is over in 1982. I'm guessing it was just sort of fading in terms of its popularity. Six seasons, though, of almost 150 shows. That's a lot. The producer, Alan Landsberg, he took this stuff and did six spinoff books. So it's stuff like In Search of Lost Civilizations, In Search of Magic and Witchcraft. He basically took the themes and put the word In Search of in the front and then just wrote. I'm guessing he'd already done the scripts and stuff. I've done stuff like this in the past. He took a script and he just moved it into a more narrative form. Like, you guys, when I write my notes to these shows, I just transpose them over into the book I'm writing on pseudo-archaeology. It's the same thing, right? You've already done the work, so why not cash in other media? He totally did that. I totally respect him for doing that. So then it's in the reruns world. I find it interesting too, though, in terms of the career of Leonard Nimoy, right? You have, so during this, he does, he's going to do Star Trek, the Motion Picture, you know, which is going to come out in 1979. And Star Trek, the Motion Picture, I heard somebody talking about it recently, and they were talking about how bad it was. And I give it like an okay. It's long. It's boring. It's not for the modern audience, but I think it has some really interesting aspects to it. I love parts of the story, but it was a meandering, not a failure, not a success, but you know, Leonard Nimoy at that point is like, dude, I'm going to stick with my day job on In Search of. But then 1982, when In Search of ends, is also the same year when Wrath of Khan comes out. So you have Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. And then Leonard Nimoy is like good to go on his Star Trek situation. You know what I mean? So I think Leonard Nimoy is just fine. And then in terms of spinoffs, right, they have the books, but this is totally proof of concept, you guys. It's like, hey, In Search of did six seasons of all these shows. Hey, let's redo it over here. How much longer is it until you're getting Unsolved Mysteries, right? Unsolved Mysteries is going to start right after that with Adam Walsh's dad, right? So you have this connection with kind of Alan Landsberg in the middle where he does In Search of, and then he also does the TV movie Adam and then Unsolved Mysteries. Or sorry, I'm actually messing up my two shows. You have Unsolved Mysteries and you have America's Most Wanted. Sorry, Unsolved Mysteries is going to pick up where In Search of left off, right? Unsolved Mysteries is going to do the same thing. America's Most Wanted is the true crime version of this split off, right? Hosted by Adam Walsh's dad. So isn't that interesting how you kind of have, really, you have Eric von Däniken's book that then has a spinoff of a couple TV shows, one a year, hosted by Rod Serling. Rod Serling dies. Then you have Alan Landsberg producing the In Search of show, successful show with Leonard Nimoy. Leonard Nimoy goes on and does his Mr. Spock stuff. In Search of then blossoms into really Unsolved Mysteries and America's Most Wanted. And then I've basically taken you all the way through the 70s and 80s, right? We've got 20 years plus. And stuff like America's Most Wanted and Unsolved Mysteries went on forever and ever and ever, you guys. I mean, how many seasons did they do? How successful were those shows? They were way more successful than In Search Of, right? But it just shows that people want this content ultimately, right? And we as archaeologists have to deal with it, right? We have to have a bit of fun, as I do on this show, about stuff like, you know, aliens and Atlantis and all that kind of stuff. But then, as I always say, we have to make our own shows that are equally fun and awesome and dynamic and spooky, whatever it may be, and mysterious. Let's hold on to the mystery, right? Let's just squeeze the mystery for all it's worth, but just make it real. And with that, I'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.